I find when I'm in a good place, when I'm in a good mental health place, and I actually make time for myself, I can come to meetings in a unique way. I can come to meetings and be actually present and be in a good mindset where I am able to contribute. That means I have to just be brutal with my time, but I do that so that I can say yes to things, so that I could change the world or change things that I want to change in a more impactful way and really focus on the things that matter.
Welcome back to The Road Untraveled. I'm super excited to be here today with Samara Mejia Hernandez, founding partner and managing director of Chingona Ventures, a venture fund that focuses on rapidly changing sectors and founders with experiences that uniquely position them to build startups in underserved growth markets. Samara's fund has $60 million in AUM and has made over 40 investments across tech sectors in financial, food, future of learning, and health and wellness. Before this, she was an investor at Math Venture Partners, started her career at Goldman Sachs, and is on the advisory board for Cool Water, Camino Financial, and Venture Forward. Amongst many other things that we will dive into here, Samara is an incredible leader and one of my good friends. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to chat.
I'm really excited to chat. It's always nice to have a friend that has a podcast and lets you on.
Amen. Amen. Samara, I love just jumping right in. What did people not tell you about being a mom and running a venture capital firm that you now know?
The most important thing is that it's okay not being perfect. There is no work-life balance. There is none. Sometimes you're a great mom and a terrible GP, and some days you're a great GP and a terrible mom. And it doesn't get any easier. It doesn't get better. You get better as a human being. You learn to prioritize your time. You learn to be incredibly efficient, and you learn to prioritize what's most important to you. And I'm very fortunate that I have a husband who is also running his own business, and he takes on a lot of duties that I would normally take. And so I'm very fortunate to have a supportive husband. I have a supportive family that comes when both my husband and I are traveling. And it's incredible, but it's, you know, hard, but one of the most rewarding things I've ever done.
I love that. I hear a little bit of entrepreneurship in the Hernandez household. I've also done a little bit of homework on you. I know you moved to the US when you were 6, and you spent a majority of your life in Chicago. I believe grandma was who kind of moved the family over. Will you talk about that journey a little bit? What did you learn from grandma? What did you learn from your family that kind of is still ingrained in a lot of things you're building at Chingona?
Yeah, it's interesting. My mom and dad come every Sunday and they help watch my son and we have lunch together. It's a family thing. And we were just talking about this yesterday. You know, when we came here, it was really hard. And my dad and my mom, I just remember looking at them yesterday and they just were really sad. And they're like, it was a really, really hard time. You know, we hadn't thought about it in years. But moving from a country where you know the language, you know, we weren't wealthy by any means, but we had a support, we had family, we had friends, culture. They had lived there for 20, 30 years. And then having to move to a new country where you don't know the language, it's cold, you know, the culture, you're experiencing all sorts of cultural differences, racism, all the things. And you have two little kids with you. And so it was very difficult. We lived below the poverty line. I remember coming to the US and going to a church where we got our first clothes and I had chocolate milk for the first time and they gave us food. But one of the things that I learned and that I instilled in me still is no matter how much you have, there's always an opportunity to give more, to give back to the community. And we were just talking about this. We lived in this one bedroom apartment with my grandma, my grandfather, my aunt, her husband, my uncle, my cousin, me, my sister, my dad, and my mom. We used to sleep on the floor. And not only that, but there would be a regular influx of immigrants that would stay. And I remember my mom, this specific story, they were working late nights and I woke up from a nightmare and I was screaming and I woke up and there was this man that I'd never seen next to me. I thought it was my dad. And I was just screaming and he calmed me down and I went back to bed. And you think about this, crazy. Like, you know, you get an influx of just immigrants. It could have been really bad, you know, these stories, but the immigrant community helps each other out and you go in and they came in for a few months and then they would, you know, find a job and then move on elsewhere. But it was a thing that we grew up with. And I'm very fortunate that now, as I got older, and I'm fortunate to have some means now, giving back is a different thing, is means something different now. And I'm fortunate that I'm able to give back in a different way. And I want to make it bigger and more impactful in bringing our community up, creating wealth in our community, and be able to have a voice and a presence, and a voice and a presence on issues that really matter. Mm-hmm. And that can move the needle for millions of Americans.
You certainly are doing that. And because I know Chingona very well, I don't think I could do nearly the justice that you could, if you don't mind, just giving people a little bit of why you started the firm. I think just from knowing your portfolio, the founders you've backed are exceptional. Some of the things they're doing are exceptional. But what initially kind of got you to say, I can't do this at some other venture firm. I have to start my own.
When I first started, I often say, you know, I was just excited to be here. I was just excited to sit down and talk to founders. We were just talking about this right before this. We're so fortunate that we can talk to amazing founders and provide capital for them to build their businesses. But for me, I just remember early on, I would see certain types of founders getting funded, certain types of networks being brought in and getting funded and getting access to capital. And it just didn't make sense to me. I'm like, I don't understand, these businesses that are getting passed on are really good. They have more traction. And maybe the founder's not from an Ivy League school. Maybe the founder can't speak the language, but they have more traction than many of the others that we've seen. And I just didn't understand that. And many of these founders were building businesses that were solving real problems, and nothing against quick food delivery or, you know, getting your laundry faster or whatever it is. But these were real issues that were affecting the 99% of America. And I'm like, I don't understand why these companies aren't getting backed. And so for me, when I went out to say, like, okay, I want to invest in these companies that are building for the 99%. I didn't see a lot of funds that were doing it, and I definitely didn't see any Latinas. I definitely didn't see many women. And I think that the biggest problem that I see is not women and minority women and minorities not having a seat at the table, not being in a place where they can actually make decisions. Pivotal Ventures just launched a report where they quoted that US-based firms where women are the majority decision makers is 4.6%. The share of women, wow, majority decision makers are 4.6%. So even with all the initiatives, even with all the, you know, things that are in the news, that is a fraction of, like, that, yeah, is like a tiny, tiny portion of what the opportunity is. Women represent over 50% of the population. We represent the majority of the household purchasing decisions. Minorities in particular, I'm going to mention Latinos in particular, one of the fastest growing in the United States. So first and foremost, it's an investable opportunity. So I wanted to, one, be that decision maker. Two, be able to view and see these businesses in a very different way. So a lot of times, as you know, there's a lot of bias that happens in this space. And if you can't relate to the founder of what they're doing, their background, it is really hard to understand the opportunity. If you're a good investor, you'll look at the market opportunity, you'll do the market sizing, you'll do all the things, the opportunity, the growth in the sector, but most investors don't. And so they're like, well, my wife wouldn't use it. I don't understand. I'm going to pass. It's so easy to pass because you see 1,000 deals, you know, whatever, a year. And so for me, I was like, I want to be able to uniquely understand these businesses. I want to be able to win these businesses because many times these are competitive deals. And I wanted to be able to provide them capital, have them grow, and provide something different and a different perspective than, you know, the traditional VC, the traditional venture capitalist.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. I want to ask about the journey of building the fund. I've heard too many how hard it was stories and all that. So I'm actually going to stay on the positive side. Will you talk about two of the most influential people in the Chingona Ventures fundraising journey? So whether they gave you money, whether they gave you portfolio construction advice, whether they made intros, like I don't really care what role they played, but just if you had to point to two people, you know, who were they, so we can shout them out and share love, but like, yeah, what did they do in particular that put them at the top of the list?
Yeah. So the first person is Rodrigo Garcia. He was the former chief investment officer for the Illinois State Treasurer's Office. And I met him through my network here in Chicago, and we had a conversation. And, you know, at the time, they had invested in fund managers, typically that were in fund two, fund three, that had a track record, that were bigger in size. And with that, you get similar types of fund managers being funded. And so when we talked, he was like, okay, well, we need to do something different. And I'm okay with funding and backing new types of managers that are not necessarily new to investing, but new to their thesis. I don't care who else is in the fund, and I'm okay being the largest check. And so he did this before all the recent moves. He did this starting back in 2017, 2018. That's where the conversation started. And to that is a lot of risk, right? Yeah. With a big institution, he's an institutional investor that manages billions of dollars. And to take a stance where nobody else was and say, you know what, we're going to look at investing in fund managers in a very different way. And we can not only that, but make a sizable check that can make a difference. And not only that, but not add any other layers of complexity to the fund that would put them in a bad position to raise follow-on capital or fund two and fund three. And so he believed in this before anybody else. He's my angel. I call him, I named my firstborn after him, and I got vetoed, but maybe my second. But he's an incredible human being that not only has done that for me, but many others. And so he's very well respected in our community. And the second person is Trey Hart from 50 South Capital. He did Illinois Growth and Innovation Fund as a client of 50 South Capital, but 50 South Capital also invests in some of the top funds in the country, in the world, actually. And he did due diligence on me for the Illinois State Treasurer's Office. And he was just incredible in just helping me, walking me through what all the top funds do. And I'm talking about like the top tier fund brand names. And here's my, you know, small $6 million first fund. And he's advising me on what all these people do. He's making introductions. He's putting me in front of people in events that I would have normally not gotten access to. And he was available, he was a text message, phone call away. And I really think that makes a big difference, because you see some of these fund managers that, you know, in today, that raise larger funds, first funds, second funds, third funds. And you oftentimes don't see there's someone behind them mentoring and helping them. And it's usually someone that has done it before and someone that has opened the doors and made introductions and helped them guide them through this complex fundraising process. Not everybody has that. And I believe that if we had more sponsors, not mentors, sponsors, that it could help someone get them through a larger fund one and fund two raise. And so for I'm forever grateful for these two human beings. There's many more that have helped me. This isn't, you know, something I've done myself, but I definitely wanted to call them out.
I love that. And we will also say, I put you on the spot to choose too. So for the whoever was number three that didn't get called out, it's no love loss. We also know that you were important to the Chingona family story. Maybe just to double click on that a little bit, for the person that doesn't have Rodrigo or Trey and is raising a fund or building a company, like any tips or tricks you would share on identifying sponsors and how to get those types of people in your corner?
Yeah, I think the way I got them wasn't because I asked them to be my mentor or my sponsor. You know, oftentimes I get people ask me like, will you be my mentor or go off and do that? I think that's, and I've done that myself, by the way. And it's hard because they don't know you. They're busy, especially people that have been very successful. But for me, when it's come out authentically, when I'm just so obsessed with this problem that nothing's going to stop me, and every party, every event, every meeting, I'm constantly talking about it. I'm showing them my deck. I'm showing them what I'm doing, my proposal. I'm doing the work before I'm actually doing it. So a lot of the founders that I would have backed if I had a fund actually did reference calls on me and said, yes, if Samara had a fund, you know, we would back her. And they made intros. And so I really feel like the world kind of this energy that you put out there of like, this is going to happen. And I'm doing whatever I can, building community, doing podcasts, doing small investments in companies, whatever it is. People see that energy and want to naturally help you. And a lot of it is not only meeting them for the first time, but following up, building relationships. And so with Rodrigo, that's what happened. And same with Trey. And so I would say, obviously, going out there and building a network, but nurturing that network and showing them your passion and what you're doing and coming prepared and being like, okay, this is what we talked about. This is exactly what we're doing. This is exactly what you said you advised me to do that I actually did. And people want to see that what the advice that they're giving you is actually meaningful and helpful. And they're more willing to make intros to other people. And so, and I think, by the way, you guys, you and Aaron have done an amazing job at that as well. Building sponsors is something that you guys know pretty well, but it happens more authentically and organically.
Yeah. And no, it matters. I love what you said around, like, you ask for advice, you get money, you ask for money, you get advice, you know, just really making sure that you don't show up with such a direct ask, but you instead look for opportunities to build the qualities of that type of relationship, the things that would make a sponsor want to sponsor you, and demonstrating those things. So completely agree with you there. If you could think a little bit about some of the failures or things that you didn't do as well as you'd hoped in this journey, what would you point to? And, you know, again, just articulating that advice to someone that's getting started on their journey, whether they're building a company or whether they're building a fund, you know, what are some of the sort of entrepreneurial trip ups that you might've had?
I think the first piece is just actually getting started. And I find this a lot, and more with minorities, more with women in particular. You know, you want to have everything perfect. And I still do. Like, I remember one of my LPs, they did a reference call for me, and we were having lunch and they were doing it in front of me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm hearing exactly how they feel about me. But one of the pieces of feedback was that I almost want to have things, I think about things a lot, and I want to have it down right. And I want to have my portfolio construction right. And I want to have my deck perfect. I want to have all this stuff before I actually go do it. And there's, you have to be intentional, thoughtful about how you're going to make money for your investors. But I think what I would have done earlier is gone earlier and gone, had more confidence in it. And I see the founders all the time that do this, right? I mean, and there's some founders that are just like, I'm like, I wish I had your confidence of just like, I don't have anything. I don't know how I'm gonna do it, but I'm raising money, right? Everybody knows those people. And I actually get inspired by my four-year-old who he goes to school and he's like, I know everything and I can do anything. And he's just so confident at that age, most four-year-olds are. And I was just like, well, you are, yeah. You know, and so having that more of that confidence and just like go and you know what, it's okay to fail. And that piece of advice is the first piece. And then the second piece is really leveraging my network more. I think, again, you and Brian, or you and Aaron did this great, but I oftentimes, even my first, raising my second fund, I don't think I went out and asked people for intros and my LP base. And the amount of people that reach out to me, they're like, hey, can you intro me to so-and-so? I'm like, I don't even know you. And then they asked for that. But I don't feel like I leveraged my network enough. And so I'm grateful that people made those intros on their own without me asking. But I would say really tapping into your network more for that support, because it's not like you ask all the time, but friends are different and they want to help you. And so when people reach out to me and they're like, hey, what do you know about this person? Can you make an intro? It's a different conversation than, you know, somebody cold asking me for something.
Yeah. I have a lot of folks that listen to this from the Black VC community and some of the other sort of young professional ecosystems that I help support. Will you give a little bit of advice to that crew for the person that doesn't have a warm intro to Samara? Like, what are the right ways to cold email you? What are the right ways to cold contact you? Like, what is your advice to someone who's kind of just getting started in this journey, but also has the hustle and scrappiness to want to get in front of folks like yourself?
Yeah, is this for people trying to get into VC or for fundraising?
Yeah, so people trying to break into the venture capital ecosystem, yeah, who might not have as enough of a network to get them to places the way that you just described, kind of doing best.
Yeah. Well, look, I used to have Friday office hours and I used to take inbounds from anybody that wanted to get into VC, but it got to be a little bit much, especially when I was fundraising. But I never just want to cancel and all that, but I try to do things that are more scalable. But there was one woman who reached out to me on LinkedIn and she was like, hey, can we meet? And I was just like, I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of fundraising, I can't. And then she was Latina from Kellogg. And I was like, I've been getting, I got reached out to like 10 times this last 2 weeks. Can you, if you can just put something together for December 15th, I made a date and invite whoever, like we can all have this conversation. And she did, she like put the deck together. She put it out on Twitter and LinkedIn. We had a big group of people and I was able to answer all the questions and do the stories and the whole thing. And I was like, wow, okay, she's impressive. Like someone that's willing to do the work, someone that has no like, oh, it's beneath me or anything like that. And she got my attention. Why? Because she added value to me. It was something that I really wanted to do, but I had no time. And so I ended up hiring her as an intern for the quarter after we did the session, and then was a reference call for her. Now she's in the venture capital community. So I think what really stands out are just a different kind of hustle, very direct. I love it when people reach out with a very specific reason and focus. There's another woman, Kelly, she was at University of Michigan getting her MBA. And she reached out, she's like, I know these are your focus sectors. I'm focusing on femtech. I've done research on this. There's like a 10-page paper on my thoughts on femtech. And, you know, I'd love to have a call just on with you on how to get into venture and my fintech thesis. I was like, she's done the work. She knows who I am. She knows what I'm doing. And I was actually diving in at that moment to the femtech sector and building it out. And so we had a conversation. We talked about that, but I just enjoyed speaking with her. And she went on to work at 2 VC firms. We're actually meeting up for lunch this Thursday. She's run a venture capital team. And so I think what really is going to stand out from all these cold emails is like doing the work, being very intentional about who you're reaching out to, not just a blanket email. And then if you can provide value to that person in a way that they're like, wow, okay, you're adding value to me already. Let's have a conversation and see how we can help.
I love that. Last one for you. This has been really fun. I so appreciate you jumping on with us. What is your best tip for making the world a better place?
Start with you. So I always use this analogy, but they always say you can't put, when you're on the airplane, put the mask on you before you put it on anybody else. and you find that a lot of people that have hatred and do all these things publicly or not so publicly have internal issues, trauma issues, and mental health is something that I've focused a lot on, especially the last few years. And I find when I'm in a good place, when I'm in a good mental health place and I actually make time for myself, I can come to meetings in a unique way. I can come to meetings and be actually present and be in a good mindset where I am able to contribute. And I can come in and have time to actually do things that are more impactful and at bigger scale. And so this is different from, for instance, when I'm just back-to-back meetings and I'm super busy, I'm not focused, I'm on, you know, 2 hours of sleep and I can't do follow-ups, I have to cancel meetings, all the things, I'm not doing anything besides just being busy. It's hard too, because that means I can't take a lot of meetings. That means I have to say no a lot of times. That means I have to just be brutal with my time. But I do that so that I can say yes to things, so that I could change the world or change things that I want to change in a more impactful way and really focus on the things that matter. And so that's my biggest piece of advice, is really thinking about putting the mask on you before helping others.
Love that. Samara Meijer-Hernandez, founding partner, managing director, Chincona Ventures. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you as always.
Thank you for having me.
Take care. That's it for this episode of The Road Untraveled. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're interested in learning more, please check us out at theroaduntraveled.io. You can follow me on Twitter at bhalls1, and you can follow The Road Untraveled on Twitter at VC Perspectives. My one ask to you is to share this with someone that you think might enjoy the episode or any of the episodes that we've had. We've really enjoyed building this community and hope to continue building going forward. Hope to see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening.